Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just got done watching Season 7, Episode 6, titled Death, Enemy is the Death, Death is the Enemy, something like that.
I think we can all agree that death is the enemy.
Yeah, an enemy is probably death. What do you think of this episode?
First of all, I wanted to come clean and say that we actually watched and recorded this late Friday afternoon. We took advantage of the leaked copy that HBO somehow aired in Portugal or whatever.
Yeah, shame on us.
Well, I mean, I think it's morally defensible because we have like four different ways that we've paid for this series and watch it. We have cable subscriptions, we have HBO Go subscriptions, legal ways to watch it. I consider this time shifting because I'm taking my family to see the eclipse on Monday. I would rather, like, you know, get to sleep early because I got to wake up early on Monday. So
whatever you got to tell yourself, man.
I'm just saying, like, I don't want to pass it off like we're doing this like as you're actually hearing us recording. You know, I try to be honest with everybody.
All right.
And trying to give our rationale for it. Some people might not like it or think, I don't know, whatever. I'm not a hypocrite about it.
Okay.
Because if you want to steal our club content and you can't pay for it, or you know, you can make the same argument about time shifting, then do it. Anyway, what did I think of this episode?
Yeah.
I have another raging Game of Throner. It is slightly bent and leaning to the left because it stands on a foundation of quicksand, but the stuff that is not built from what we mutually agreed of was stupid last week was really amazing, and the execution of the stupid plan was really awesome. And I had an experience of, like, I was just in real time trying to figure out, like, where is this going and what does this mean? And does this mean Dany's Azor Ahai and And it was really, really thrilling. I even came around on Arya Sansa stuff.
Yeah. I think they're doing more there than first meets the eye. Last episode, it started to seem a little bit like, what the hell are you doing, Arya? But this episode, I think it became a little more clear that something is up here.
Mm-hmm.
That Arya is not just falling for this trap necessarily. Something deeper is going on.
But Sansa has no, like, Sansa's completely ignorant.
Yeah, I don't think they're working together. I think there's something else going on, though.
And I think that, like, it could even be as easy as, like, this is a manifestation of Arya's damage. Like, we've talked about how it's really weird to see this little girl who's become an assassin, and we're cheering for her to kill all these people, and, like, for this to all these, all, like we don't like the trauma that gets inflicted on her, but we like it when she inflicts trauma on other people, and we want to seem like that's not going to change her. But it could have permanently made her a more suspicious, distrustful person, and
for sure
simultaneously is a manifestation of Sansa's trauma, because she does have a little bit of this lust for power and control and to make sure that she's safe from an attack. And the dynamic here where, like, Arya, I think, trust her because she did play the game. And as soon as they started playing the game of faces, I was like, oh my God, this is like her living lie detector. Like, it was a weird way that she trusted Sansa, because I don't I thought that they were going to sit there and, like, get their business taken care of. But it's almost like, I'm going to trust that you're doing the right thing, and I want you to know how utterly screwed you are if you disappoint me. I'm not
okay. Yeah,
I'm not, like, I'm going to tell you the absolute truth about how I roll, and I'm not going to bother to get into your tangled bird's nest of a brain. I'm just saying, if you betray Jon, you are going to be dead.
Yeah.
And in the most chilling psychopath way possible. But it felt...
And that's what we want from Arya, I think.
Yeah. Now, I'm a little confused about the... You know, I've only seen this once. Instant reaction. Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused about the machinations with Brienne.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think we're supposed to be still up in the air very much on what exactly the plan is.
Right.
But clearly there is a plan afoot here.
And there's
a couple sides.
And that's the thing. Like, I think the other thing that's re-engaged me in this plot line is that they're clearly not doing the stupid stands as stupid Arya. Like, they're thinking things through. Littlefinger's thinking things through. This is a cat and mouse game between three cats, simultaneously three mice.
Yeah, no, it's a battle of wits, which is what I want from all of these characters.
Yeah.
Frankly.
And they wanted to send the bulldog away of Brienne so she doesn't interfere somehow.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because maybe, and the other thing is, like, I wonder if Brienne, like, Sansa sent Brienne away to signal to Arya that, like, I'm not afraid of you, and the only reason I'm not afraid of you is because I have nothing to hide. Like, Littlefinger's advice was maybe get, like, was Littlefinger trying to manipulate her into using Brienne as a...
The way I read the scene with Arya and Sansa was a little bit of Arya saying, trust me and go with this. And her going to Littlefinger, you know, and kind of playing along with his plot is part of that.
Right.
So clearly Littlefinger wants Brienne out of the way because Brienne can put a sword through his guts.
Right.
Because, and spin him around.
Because, yeah, I, the only thing that threw me off the two girls working together to Littlefinger's detriment is that, like, a lot of this, Littlefinger wasn't watching them, so it's not like theater. It's like a real, there was real stakes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, the other thing I'm worried about, because, like I said, I want to lead with all the good stuff before we get to the bad stuff, but I do feel like, you know, people that were on the train of being disappointed in the last episode, like, if they didn't give this one episode a fair shot, that it's, like, a lot of the stuff is just compounding. And I can see a lot of people, like, well, this isn't. And whereas I'm from the thing, it's like, well, if you accept the fact that the double Ds are going to, they've got these bullet points, right? They're a constellation. Mm-hmm. And each individual star is brilliant and shining and really cool. You know, but the constellation's not connected. Mm-hmm. And George hasn't bothered to connect it. And George is taking a sweet ass time to connect it. And the double Ds have just a few months to write this thing. And they're like, I got to get to the next star. I'm willing to look at that. If you're willing to, if you're like from the double Ds, don't know what they're doing, then, like, I think this is more ammo for your can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to like about this episode, and I'm willing to overlook just how stupid of an idea it is to be up here in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, okay, gotta ignore that. Does everything else satisfy me? And I think so.
Yeah, I text a friend of mine who knew that I was going to watch the episode, and he's like, well, tell, like, you know, no spoilers, but tell me what you think. And I'm like, It's 20% stupid and 80% so fucking awesome you can barely handle it.
Right.
So, and if you focus on the 20%, you're going to have all, and we'll probably at the end of this start talking about that 20%. But I want to start with what works. Like,
it starts off right away with stuff that really worked.
Like, all those conversations that the dudes were having, it was the right amount of funny. There was, like, these real moments between, like, John and Tormund. Like, after Tormund had played around with Gendry about, like, oh, we make do with what we can north of the wall.
Right.
Then he's like, you know, they had a real conversation about, like, this new guy and what's it like. And Beric and John's conversation about, you know, the shield that defends the realm of men and that's enough. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Finally, John and Jorah.
John and Jorah have that conversation. Yes. And Jorah's essentially selling his family's birthright.
And this is exactly how I expected Jorah to react. It's so perfectly down the lane of that character that I was practically standing up cheering, saying, thank you. This is the perfect scene.
The only thing that would make it perfect would be if John said, I accept on two conditions. Number one, if you ever change your mind, Longclaw's yours.
Uh-huh.
And secondly, when you die, I'm going to let your whoever is the head of your house at the time decide whether they want it back in the Mormons or whether it stays the Starks.
Okay.
Yeah. But the thing about that scene,
he didn't close the door or anything.
And the thing about the scene is that, like, I think John was brought up short, number one, by the generosity of the gift, and number two, that the idea that he might father children and have a family, I think, is something he's never allowed himself to think about until just now.
Yeah.
So, like,
could be.
It was okay with me to see John kind of like what. But those conversations were just excellent.
They were funny. They were what you expect from the characters. And I really enjoyed those.
And even, like, who said goodbye to the Hound and's like, I'll see you. You know, we'll see. You. And the Hound's like, I fucking hope not. Like that.
Yeah. I think it was Beric.
All of the Magnificent Seven stuff was really, really good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Dany and Tyrion, because I was like, fuck yeah, democracy in Westeros, because that's what, like Tyrion was fumbling for the word, because those words don't exist.
Sure, yeah.
And he was going and like, it's interesting because when he was saying, who are we going to pick as your predecessor? I think he was leading towards like, how do we like, hey, the Night's Watch is this way, or there's others, these other kind of like quasi democratic institutions. And Dany, she took it to be like an attack on her infertility. And like, it made sense because I feel like Tyrion, I've seen a lot of other like smart people, and I've been that person that like has got a point where they've used their intellect and their wit and their charm to get to the persons that are at the breaking point. And instead of backing off and letting them have that moment and wrestle with their own mind, they fucking press the attack.
Mm-hmm.
And it provoked a reaction from Dany.
The defense response, yeah.
Right. And I think that she'll like it's becoming harder for me to believe that Dany is going to be the Mad Queen after this episode. But also like, you know, I was surprisingly nervous and on pins and needles about major characters. Like they did kill Thoros. Probably talk about the particulars of that. When Tormund was going under the ice, I thought like, oh my God, they're going to kill Tormund.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we made all those jokes about red shirts and they damn sure killed every one of them. But like I thought, and then when Jon went under, I was like, oh my God, Dany Azor Ahai. She just reversed Nissa John. Like she's the light, her and her dragons are collectively Lightbringer. And then when he came back up, like that was also kind of awesome. Cause like now John, he can't be killed apparently.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to, you know, be extrapolating and trying to come up with an idea of what John is and isn't.
Yes.
Does he need to breathe?
I don't know.
Can he freeze to death?
None of his like, wounds look healed either. They're really they're bloodless, but they're nasty and gaping.
Yeah. So we just really don't know, right? All we know is he went under for an unspecified period of time.
Yeah.
And he came back up. He looked cold, but he looked like he was
when they were like prying apart his frozen clothes, like that would kill any normal person. Uh-huh. So I feel it. Now people are like, well, where's the drama now? Like, I don't think that he can't be killed.
Right, yeah, I mean, he could be dismembered.
Right.
Certainly.
And also, like, is the Lord of the Light propping him up? So, like, what if he starts not serving that purpose? Can he be corrupted? Those are all interesting questions. And the other thing, like, the whole time, like, when Dany was, like, looking out over the expanse of the Haunted Forest from the wall and... like, I knew that we were about to see that Jon was going to be returned to, you know, I was like, please, Emilia, nail this moment. Please sell me on the grief of your dragons turning to the hope of this love kindled with Jon. And I felt like they fucking did it.
Yeah.
And then I also thought the moment where, like, probably everyone that watches this that is a shipper of Don and Jon and Dany at all.
Mm-hmm.
Was like willing them to jump in the bed and they pulled back. I thought that was perfect too.
It was. And we didn't talk about maybe the most disturbing death of this entire episode. The Blue Eyes White Dragon.
Wow.
W-I-G-H-T Dragon. Yeah. I wish we named our episode so we could name it that. But man, they did that really well.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about maybe some bullshit with that, but that dragon sinking into that lake was awesome.
It was
was beautiful. It was everything you wanted it to
and
be.
It went from like I've had similar kind of like semi-patriotic like just stirring like battlefield courage moments. Like I always think of like when the Eagles come in to save the day at the end of the Lord of the Rings movie. Mm-hmm. Like it's just there's some things that are just beautiful and you're ready to roll with it. Like when the dragons came in and just started whipping ass, like it was like that. But it's then like when the Night King like got that spear out, I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And it was just
you knew one of them was definitely going to get
it. They sold the devastate. Like, that, whatever that thing is, it is kryptonite to dragons.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the blood leaking from it as... Or
almost like lava. Like, they talk about dragons are fire-made flesh, and the way they did that and how rock-solid the modeling was, mm-hmm, and the weight of its impact, and like you said, it's sinking beneath the waves. And the other dragons kind of like... being angry, I felt like the CGI dragons acting performance was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
It was really great.
I've got a question. What does a white dragon shoot? Does it shoot fire?
Does I wouldn't think so because like you know
does
we
it shoot anything?
I'm gonna go. I'm going to go with the fact that, like, ice dragons have been something speculated for so long that they're going to go for ice dragons. Because fire-breathing ice white doesn't seem like... It seems like...
That's the thing. Like, it doesn't make sense to have it breathing ice, really.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it could breathe cold.
It's like having a flamethrower unit that has wicker armor. It's just not... It's not a smart idea.
Right. It makes zero sense to have it breathe fire.
And it's a song of ice and fire, so I assume that the... You know, and we've talked about the... You know, these concepts of ice whites versus fire whites, because John's like a fire white, Beric is a fire white. Mm-hmm. I thought that, like, if the dragon, the ice white dragon, is like the antithesis of the fire, living fire dragon, I think it should breathe cold.
Okay.
I think that will be pretty sweet.
Yeah. I don't know how cold the cold will be. Will it be like sub-zero freezing somebody and then shattering them? Or will it be like, damn, I wish I'd worn a heavier coat?
Or maybe it'll be something even crazier, like the Night King can swoop down, breathe this on a crowd of people and instantly turn them to whites.
Oh, Jesus.
Because it's like, because here's the thing. Influence. This flipped the stakes because like I went to like, God damn, what if they just kill the Night King here? Mm-hmm. Or like when there was like a lane open and like I thought John might like charge him and do that kind of like, and the war will be over and then we just have to worry about Cersei, which, you know, whatever. But like it's super dangerous now for these dragons.
Yeah.
They are lethal to the whites and the White Walkers, but it's you know, the Night King's aim is true, and he's got enough of those spears, like, that advantage will flip back the other way, because how do you kill an ice white dragon?
Yeah.
Scorpions? Red hot scorpions? And I thought, like, also they made Drogon super badass when he finally started to haul, like, it's like the fact that he was, like, trying to haul his dragon ass out there and just barely making it, and did that, like, half barrel roll to evade the spear. Like, that was super cool.
I feel like you could kill that thing pretty easily with dragon fire. Like, if Drogon gets up there and blows fire in its face, it's done.
But, right? Like, if it's close enough to breathe on you, can it breathe on it? You know, that's the thing.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
It's completely flipped the scales over what I thought this battle was going to be.
Sure.
And it's like, that's the thing. Like, that's the exciting part of this phase of Game of Thrones. It's just like that, the balance of power can change.
Yeah. Well, it has a couple of times now.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought that was, I just thought it was just super cool and amazing.
Yeah.
And it's also hinting that, like, so I guess was that, we know that the White Walker himself was turned, your Night King was turned by shoving obsidian. I wonder if, that spear looked like it was made out of, like, the glassy, milky ice that all their weapons are made of. But I wonder if, like, that's some kind of, their weakness is also their power kind of thing. Although it killed the dragon and then turned it to a white. He had to do the whole touchy-feely thing.
Yeah.
The creepy version of John Fiston Drogon's nostril.
yeah, it was creepy.
I
think they did just barely enough not to make Benjen a deus ex machina.
But
when he shows up, because I don't know if you caught this, but when they're fighting the small group of a few whites and a single White Walker, those White Walkers approach, or that White Walker approaches a fire, like a campfire, which you can assume is Benjen, right? Mm-hmm. He's the only person up north who would be lighting a campfire.
I thought they set that as a deliberate trap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought they stumbled upon it around the same time that he stumbled upon it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so Benjen was there camping. Although, why would he build a fire to keep himself warm? He can generate fire at will with his little thing.
Hmm.
I mean, we'll have to watch it a couple more times and get what other... I think it's one of those things where, like, you could probably bend any interpretation at this point.
Maybe I'm just hoping that they did more to establish Benjen being up there than just have him appear out of nowhere on a horse.
Can we talk about the savagery of the white bear? Like, I thought that fight had a lot of, like, oomph. And when Thoros got, like, torn apart, you know, Thoros is, he's like a pink shirt. He's not quite red, but he's probably the one of that group that we care least about.
Okay, yeah. But we, you know, specifically mention him as the healer, right? And who you go after first in a party.
Yeah.
He got taken out.
Smart tactics by the White Walkers.
Yeah, which raises the stakes, I think, for both Beric and Jon.
And also the fact that, like, they... So we talked in the main podcast how this mountain is this famous mountain in Sweden or Norway or which is the Scandinavian country that this has been filmed in.
I can't remember.
But it was the same, like the mountain is the same place that the original White, the Night King was made. And it's also the one that the Hound saw in his dream.
Mm-hmm.
That does seem important.
It does, yeah.
And also the fact that the Army of the Dead, because that's the thing, you know. There's a lot of hooting and hollering over, oh, like, you know, that there's this image went around Reddit last week. We talked about this in the spoiler where someone had superimposed all of where Jon's been, like this crisscrossing green line this season, all over Westeros.
Yeah.
And then they showed this like little tiny red line of like from Hardhome to halfway to Eastwatch by the sea, and that's where the Night King has gotten. Like, mm-hmm. har, jetpacks versus White Walkers. But it's entirely possible that they are massing there for some kind of magical purpose.
Yeah.
And it's possible. Or waiting for some kind of prophecy to be fulfilled, or waiting to, like, maybe this was a trap for for Azor Ahai that they sprung.
Is it possible that they stumbled into the Lion's Den, essentially? Like,
yeah, like that. This could
that's
be
where the babies
the
are turned.
Their power. And, yeah. Because we, yeah, that's, in, yeah. I don't know, but like, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
For sure.
So, have we praised the episode high enough?
Is
there anything
so,
else
yeah.
we want to talk about before we can get to the other side of the coin?
No, I'm ready for the other side of the coin.
This plan is still super stupid.
Of course,
and
yeah.
it needed multiple miracles to happen. Now, I'm actually astonished at how well, like, when John was running across that cracked ice, like, how in the hell are they going to get out of this? And then when the whole ice, except for this little island, like, that was super cool. That was surprisingly cool. But, like, how are they going to, like, I mean... Danny and John talk about it, and essentially everything that happened had to happen, because if it didn't happen this particular way, then it wouldn't happen.
Right.
So, like, you know, that's kind of like meditating on why the Earth is perfect for human condition. Well, if it wasn't, then humans wouldn't be on a living.
To meditate about
so, okay. I just can't get over how dumb the plan is. And sure. now that they've actually gotten the White, like, do you think there's any chance at all that Cersei's going to take this seriously?
No, I still, it doesn't matter if they bring back the Night's King and he's still, like, totally the Night's King. She's not going to care. She'll say she cares. She'll say, oh, yeah, sure, let's do this thing, Armistice, totally. And then she'll backstab you. That's the plan here. That's the play.
Yeah, that's the thing I can't shake. So, like, the whole thing is built on this house of sand.
Yeah.
Having said that, the red shirting is egregious.
It is. Yeah, every single person up there who doesn't matter gets killed before any of our main characters.
Yeah,
right?
And I think
it's not entirely true. But
I think
close.
They could. I actually kind of wonder. Like, I don't know what role Tormund needs to play from here on out, but I kind of feel like they should have killed Tormund.
I think they should have killed Jorah or somebody who doesn't have as big of a role to play as Jon, but is still important to us as fans.
Yeah. And Thoris wasn't bad. I mean,
I didn't care about Thoris one bit.
So you think because
he's not a character that I care about.
So is this like in your mind? Is this like because like you know there's some shows that have gotten to be jokes of late about like you know The Walking Dead, like you know that we really don't feel major characters are in danger, and when they do finally kill them off, it doesn't. Are you with this at the show? Because I felt like. Even though I saw the blatant red shirting going on, I really was genuinely afraid for Tormund. I was genuinely afraid for Jon. And I think the difference between Game of Thrones and these other shows is I do feel like any of these people could die at any point.
Yeah, I think I still agree with that, especially in this episode with talk from Tyrion about, you know, Dany's successor.
Yeah.
Like, that gets me a little worried about Dany herself, honestly. I don't know. I'm not willing to rule it out because we've seen time and time again that Game of Thrones will kill people.
Right.
And they will kill them in gruesome ways and unexpectedly.
Do you want me to pitch these balls at you or do you want to pitch one to me? Because the next thing I want to say is the way that Thoros went out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even know. It seems So here's the thing. Like, I'll excuse the double Ds for this constellation problem where they got all these bullet points and they're individually cool, but they're not connected. That's the thing that's been bedeviling George, apparently. Mm-hmm. And it's the thing that's bedeviling them, except for they have a much they can't wait 7 years to tell the story. But there's some self-inflicted gunshot wounds here.
Sure.
Thoros getting mauled by this bear and look in and seeing these like grievous wounds, like, you know, Leo DiCaprio and Revenant type shit, who also lived through his mauling, to be fair. I don't understand what the point of cauterizing his wounds, having him, and he's looking like he's on death's door the whole time, having him come to this place and freeze to death on the island. Like, yeah. Having the bear just, like, I thought when they were giving him the wine that was going to be his, like, you know, medic moment for him saving Private Ryan. like, I could use some right. more morphine.
And then Beric lights up the sword. And
then they're going to set him on. And then when he started, like, screaming, I'm like, they're going to burn him. Like, that's metal, but it's the Lord of the Light and the death by fire is the purest death. Like, he's really committed to that. But then it's like, you cauterized his entire torso?
Yeah, I guess so.
Just so he freezes to death on an island later?
And that's the thing. Everybody else who got bit by the bear died instantly.
Like, yes.
Incapacitated beyond help.
Tormund, I mean, a lot of the squad got some swipes and came away no worse for wear. But yeah, the important people, right. Anyone that the bear got into and just worried. Like, yeah, they were goners.
Yeah.
And he did
that to Thoros, and I don't know how Thoros survived it.
And I'm glad that Thoros died because I was not buying that he was going to live.
Yeah.
But I don't know why he just didn't die there. Like,
right.
What plot point was achieved by dragging him? So it just seems dumb.
Maybe the only possibility I see is that they were trying to tell us how much time has passed, because I know there are going to be 1,000 people screaming, what, how the fuck did this raven fly so far so fast, and how did Dany get up there before the
all
White
valid
Walkers
questions
attacked?
By the way, I don't know what the airspeed of an unladen Westerosi raven, but
yeah, somebody's done this math. It all tracks. Like,
does it?
Perfectly. Like,
really?
Way more perfectly than I expected.
A raven can make Dragonstone from Eastwatch.
It's about 4 days.
It's
implied that they stay there for about 4 days.
Why is it implied that?
You just read the Reddit threads. You'll see.
Okay, so you've done a little digging.
Last night. But I think that's what they were going for, is to show us an amount of time is passing here.
Okay.
In which he will die. The other stupid thing.
4 days to take to refreeze the lake that's already frozen. That's another
problem.
That's
apparently how long it takes. No, so
really?
Yeah. For enough ice, just read Reddit.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to explain it here.
I'm skeptical, but we'll. That's what the full cast is for.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was incredibly stupid is that Tormund questions how they're going to burn the body of Thoros when he has seen twice now Beric light up his fucking sword with
right.
fire from nowhere.
Right, right.
Once when they were fighting the bears, once when they were cauterizing his wounds. Where does he think that fire came from?
Right. Yeah, no, that was...
It's just sloppy writing. That's silly.
But here's the dumbest part.
Yeah.
So the Night's King winds up his spear. He's got his hand out from his POV, and he's sighting up Drogon, who has every remaining hero. Jon Snow inexplicably is going berserker.
He's the instant mode of escape for all of our heroes.
And Jon Snow is going berserker, trying to get himself killed for no damn plot. But I haven't gotten to the stupid part yet.
Getting farther and farther and farther away from Drogon.
As if Drogon needs help to defend himself from these ice zombies at this point. Now,
right.
Again, Jon didn't know that this guy had some kind of anti-fucking dragon javelin missile.
But he knew that his buddies were trying to get the hell out of there, and they were shouting, John, let's fucking go!
But the Night King's winding up, he targets Drogon, has all the heroes aboard, and inexplicably then pans over to try to hit the moving, flying target.
Why?
Unless he's, like, the only thing that I can make sense is that he's fucking with John. He can't kill John yet because he is waiting for some kind of prophecy, magic thing to align perfectly. And there's so much we don't understand about him and his motivations. I'm willing to pause that criticism for a bit, but why they, like, there's so many different ways they could have done that, unless we're supposed to take that, again, you know, there's always the, like, this could be prophetically or magically significant, and only the Night King knows.
Right, later on.
Although there's a point where that becomes its own version of stupidity and laziness.
Sure.
But, like, why couldn't he have, like, tried to kill Drogon, and then Viserion, I think, is the one that gets killed?
Yeah, it's whatever that, yeah, whatever Rhaegal slash Drogon, not those two.
Okay,
is.
Because that's the one named after a brother. He died. Like, if he had swooped in front at the last minute and taken the bullet, to me, that's a perfect self-inflicted gunshot wound, because it just looks super stupid. The Night King had him dead to right, is the closest dragon, is a dragon not moving, and he inexplicably targets another one.
You could even have Bran controlling Viser, whatever his name
is. Yes, like if they could
like
have, like,
warging into it,
they
right?
Could warg, yeah.
To block the spear from hitting Drogon and essentially dooming all of our heroes. I don't know.
There's other
kind of that was dumb.
There's other kind of head scratchers, like they have a dragon retrieval system. Yeah, they got these heavy chains that they can go drag dredge a dragon out of.
Yeah,
the,
where did they get those chains?
I mean, that's I know we're going to get emails like that, but I feel like that's the ticky tacky stuff. That's the other stuff is the.
I mean, it's
stuff.
A fair question when you have gigantic fucking chains.
I mean,
they hauling these things around?
It implies that maybe this was a trap for the good guys. That, like, maybe the, because, like, the thing that you can say about the Night King that you can't say about Jon is he's done all this before.
Yeah.
He's been beaten, he's signed an armistice with the good guys at some point. Like, he understands the way this game is played in a way that the others just, well, he is the other. and the way that the humans, the people that are still living don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another thing that's kind of pertinent. I'm verbalizing this. Do you remember when John said in the previous episode that there's only two sides, the living side and the side of the dead?
Yeah.
John's on the dead side, right?
Potentially.
Like, when he came, like, it was like my mind was on fire when he slipped beneath those waves, because I'm like, we're going to see John. He's going to be an Isom. He's going to be the king, the Night King's acolyte or something.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, he said that. I mean, no one put a gun to his head and made him say those words.
But yeah, I don't know what his status is, if he's dead or alive or some state between. Talks about it as if he's come back to life, but I don't know if that literally means life.
Yeah. I'm just saying that I don't believe a human could survive the things he went through.
Yeah.
He, you know, but. Yeah, I don't know.
The one big, big development.
Well,
that we need
by the
to
way,
talk
RIP.
About,
the dragon has three heads now, right?
Yeah, they only need two dragon riders at this point.
Right,
John and Danny could be both of them,
unless the third head is
Night King
is Bran, and he wards the Ice Dragon. Like the Night King thinks he's got him beat because he destroyed the Three Eyed Raven, and Bran, you know, is able to wrest control of the undead Viserion.
That could be interesting.
Yeah.
I think the biggest development, though, of the episode is at the end, John decides he's going to bend the knee. This is the moment. So,
still they don't consider the value of a marriage alliance.
Yeah, like, they're sitting there holding hands, like, looking into each other's eyes, and then, like you said, they pull back. But,
right. I thought that was appropriate, but, god damn, this show's got giving me, you know, white eyes, blue balls. over this thing, and I get it, it's gross, she's his aunt, his nephew, like, you know. Someone did you see that post on a forum that someone on Reddit did the incest math?
Yeah, I saw that.
That, like, Danny, like, and John, they're like
40 something percent,
they're like way more related than you'd already think a niece or a nephew and an aunt would be, because the Targaryens are crazy inbred. They're like 56% genetically identical, and that's like, that's you're playing genetic Russian roulette at that point.
Yeah.
But still, they're really beautiful people, and that was a moment. I got caught up in it.
I just think John's rolling the dice here with whether or not these lords are willing to follow Dany. Because I don't know what their view of, you know, this. It's not wrong to call her a foreign invader. Look, I don't know what their view of her is going to be.
He's either the king that they've seen come back from the life and save their bacon, and he comes on the back of a dragon queen with the dragons, and he says she single-handedly incinerated half the armies of the dead and lost one of her children, and he's either the king of North or he's not. I'm just worried until Dany swooped in like the avenging angel and saved the fucking day with her squadron of dragons.
Well, until he tells them the plan that they had, and then they're like, you wanted to what? You wanted to fucking what?
Yeah, well...
Oh, we're all going to meet with Cersei and have a big playtime? No, get out of here.
Yeah. I feel like...
They're on the fence right now with what we've seen with Sansa, right?
Yeah, it feels like the dragons are knee-bending machines.
Yeah.
they're fire made flesh, and they also just compel one's knee to hit the ground. Like,
yeah.
Your knee's made of nickel iron and the earth's made of magnet all of a sudden, and this is irresistible. And yep. The thing is I buy that effortlessly. Like, these are fearsome war winning machines. Sure. And the fact that now they're even more precious because you know they can be taken from you. And oh, by the way, like, if the lords aren't ready to bend the knee, the Night King riding an undead dragon breathing ice fire on Winterfell might change their mind.
Yeah.
The other thing is it just makes all the southern stuff even more stupider, more stupid, dumber.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I mean, if the northern lords don't want to go along with her, I could see her being in an even worse position than she's in with Cersei and not wanting to just go burn King's Landing, right? Like, how do you make these people follow you if they don't want to?
Right.
Without forcing them.
Right. So, like I said, I'm more than willing to overlook the dumb stuff to get to the part, because I think it felt like there's a lot of parts here where these are the story that needs to be told, and these are the sins that have to be committed to tell that story with the state that the story was left to them in their hands. And people can disagree, and that's fine. It's a subjective opinion. But
Several unforced errors, though, I think.
There was even like, then. But, I mean, I guess, like...
But overall,
the Thor stuff is completely... The dragon, like, maybe the Night King's got his reasons. I don't know. But there was a couple points where I was ready to believe anything could happen.
Yeah.
Like, when they're like, you know, he's here, and he's the one that created them all. Like, oh, wow. Because that's the other thing. Oh, we've completely glossed over that. You kill a White Walker and all the whites that it made instantly are destroyed?
I mean, that's the implication, yeah.
That is a hell of a weakness. It makes sense, though. Like, I bought it.
Yeah, I have so many questions. We'll probably talk about them during the full cast, but yeah, that's a big development as well.
So that's a super long... Also, the episode felt like it was on forever, but it was only like an hour.
Yeah.
Like, I was amazed at how much stuff that they squeezed in this. And boy, what the hell are they going to finish this up with for next week?
I don't know.
So, that's it. We'll be back on Tuesday.
Tuesday
to do the full-blown treatment. I'm sure it'll be a marathon. And then, you know, back Friday with the spoiler. And then we got the final episode to go.
Yeah.
What the heck, man?
I'm excited.
Send that feedback in. GameOfThrones@baldmove.com. And we will talk to you Tuesday.
Yeah, see you then.
See ya. Hey, everybody, I wanted to talk about the club, because that's how things like this instant take get paid. We essentially do the Tuesday show for free. Everything else it has to be paid for somehow. And the club's a great way to do it, because it's a direct way. Like, every dollar you send goes right to us and helps us produce these podcasts, and you get a lot of cool stuff in return. Lots of extra bonus audio and video content, ad-free feeds, so you never have to hear me scrape and grovel for money again. But we've got some cool features coming out this week. There's the Empire Business, which is our podcast where we kind of do a transparent look into the behind the scenes here at Bald Move, how we do things, how we make decisions, how much money we make, and how we spend it. And this week we're going to be talking about social media and our social media strategies we've been doing. Also, we have a cool video game playthrough of the first installment of The Wolf Among Us, which is a Telltale adventure narrative story game where when we play the Telltale games, we always try to be the worst possible version of the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And we fight the characters, and we fight the engine of the Telltale game equally. So even if you played The Wolf of Wall Street, The Wolf of Wall Street's a totally different game. It's a much more coked up version of the werewolf. But if you played Wolf Among Us, you probably haven't played it this way. Did we get above 20%? Like,
I don't think so.
Of any choice we made, like less than 20% of all players made the choices we made, and that's yeah. I feel like we did a good one when we get like that you know low double digit scores of approval. Mm-hmm. So that's coming out on for club members, and again, it's a great way to support us. club.baldmove.com. We'd appreciate any of your support in advance.